Thank you. John Skibinski gave my whole talk. Very good, John. I only wish I had a past Purdue speech. Right, Joe? Now, I'd like to introduce my buddy. I know John probably was a little bit shy, but I had the pleasure to play with Mr. Joe Skibinski at Purdue University, and I'll tell you, he broke me in. In 1948, when I went there, seeing I was a Polish boy, and he was Polish, and he was from the south side of Chicago, I was from the northwest side, and I guess he took me under his wing, and I want to thank you, Joe, publicly for everything you ever done for me. Thank you very much. You know, I was talking here before. I'm from the old neighborhood in Chicago on Fullerton and Central. It's an old Polish neighborhood. They call it Cragen. And if I ever mentioned Cragen, nobody knew where the hell I was from. Now, when I mentioned Oak Park, everybody lit up, because that's where all the rich guys lived. But as it turned out, I never played baseball in high school because at that time, the Catholic schools didn't have baseball. We had football and basketball. And I went through a grammar school scholarship. And that's something, a grammar school scholarship. My mom didn't have to pay anything. My dad didn't have to pay anything. I think we were paying $10 a year. But then I went to Weber High School on a football scholarship. Played football and basketball. Never played baseball. I played that softball in Chicago. We call it the 16-inch. It was Windy City softball. And I was 16 years old. And I played 3-4 times a week, and on Sundays I'd play hardball. And my dad would get angry at me because he says, Junior, he says, you got to play hardball. You can't hit that big 16-inch and hit a baseball on Sundays. And I says, Dad, I got to play. I like playing ball. So as it turned out, I go to Purdue University on a football scholarship. I was mad because I wanted to go to Notre Dame, but Mr. Frank Leahy says I was too small. And I says, well, as long as you don't want me, I'll go to Purdue University. So I went to Purdue, and I played football, basketball, and baseball. I had the pleasure to have Stu Holcomb as a football coach. Jack Mollenkopf was my line coach. Mel Tobey was my basketball coach. And a ball player by the name of Hank Stram, who was released with the New Orleans. He was Kansas City Chiefs coach. He was my freshman baseball coach at Purdue. And after I didn't hit the books that well. But I had played three sports, and all of a sudden Purdue University said, Moose, we want you to play semi-pro ball in Austin, Minnesota. So I went there, and they gave me $400 a month. I was learning to be a plumber. I was a plumber's helper. I'd put the gaskets and piles, ceilings in the ceilings, and I worked my fanny off, I'll tell you. Insert, you're pounding on, you hit a steel rod, and you got to move it over a little bit, and I'm pounding away, and one day I was in the corner, we're building a hospital, and a guy forgot to put a sleeve in the corner, and I'm pounding a hole over there, and I get through 6 inches of concrete. All of a sudden, he looks at the blueprint, he says, Moose, I made a mistake, it's on the other side. I grabbed that hammer and threw it right through a window. But as it turned out, it was a good job, and all of a sudden, the Chicago White Sox scout, he didn't like my father, so he didn't offer me a contract. The Cub scout saw me play in Austin, Minnesota. I hit 4 home runs off of 4 different pitchers in 1 game. He didn't offer me a contract. And I thank God every night when I go to bed, Father, that a Yankee scout was there, and I got 7 Yankee World Series rings and a Dodger World Series watch. And Ernie Banks played 20 years and never was in one. And every time he sees my ring, he kisses it. But I have to give him that little jab now and then, you know? But baseball was very good to me. I had the good fortune to play 17 years. I had the pleasure to play with Mickey Mantle, who I thought was one of the greatest ball players ever played. Here's a guy that played on blood and guts. He didn't have no cartilages in his knees, the inside or the outside, they were removed. He'd get a rub down or a massage for 30, 40 minutes prior to the game. But when he went on that field, was always 100%. Roger Maris is a man I played with, hit 61 home runs in 1 year, hit more home runs than anybody in baseball. I don't care if Babe Ruth played 150 games or 154. Roger Maris hit more home runs in 1 year than anybody in baseball. And a hell of a nice guy. He got blackballed because sports writers asked him a few questions, and they were personal, and Roger grabbed the sports writer by the throat in a clubhouse and almost beat the heck out of him. And as it turned out, this sports writer went on to blackball Roger, and Roger never got the publicity that he deserved because he was a great all-around ball player. Even if he hit 220 or 240, he was a great team player, always played 100%. Today, he's got a beer distributorship in Tampa, Florida. He's got 8 counties, sells Budweiser beer. He makes $100,000 a year. He signs the checks on Fridays. That's all he does. And his brother runs the business, and he makes another $100,000. So when they knock Roger Maris, it's a thorn in my side because Roger and I are very good friends. And here's a man, in 1961, Roger hit 61 home runs. Mickey hit 54. I hit 28. Johnny Blanchard hit 22. Yogi Bear hit 21. And Elston Howard hit 23. We hit more home runs in that year than anybody in baseball. And you young boys, check the rosters. Because I've got a dozen baseballs signed by Mantle, Maris, and Moose, the three M's they used to call us. And I'm not selling those things because we hit 143 home runs between three guys in one given year. And that's a record. No, it was a great life, I'll tell you. I had the pleasure to go out with Marilyn Monroe and her husband, Joe DiMaggio. You see how nice I put it in, right? I'll never forget her. Father, she was built like a rock. DiMaggio and Joe DiMaestri and Tony Kubek, myself and Yogi went out with her, and I'll tell you, she was a wonderful woman. She wanted to learn baseball. She was always in our conversations at the table. And I'll tell you, every time I see Joe DiMaggio, I see him once a year in Vegas or Yankee Old Timers Day. And Joe always says, you know, Moose, he says, when you worked out with the Yankees at Stocks Park in 1950, he said, I was the one that told Casey Stengel to sign you up. He says, now I want my 10% bonus that you get, which I got 20. The biggest mistake I made, I know Johnny finished school, his dad finished school. I only went 2 years to Purdue. When the Yankees offered me a bonus of $25,000, I quit school. And the mistake I made, maybe I didn't have a good lawyer or agents like they have now, but I should have put in my contract that the Yankees would have paid my college education during the winter and I'd have got my degree, which I did make a mistake. I know I played with a ball player by the name of Dr. Bobby Brown, who was a Yankee third baseman, and he went to schools during the winter, and he got his degree, and right now he's one of the biggest heart specialists in Houston, Texas, and doing a heck of a job. He's trying to operate on Whitey Ford, but Whitey doesn't want to get that operation. I guess he's got some clogs, what do they call those, Dan? I should have taken up biology, damn it. Right, Joe, cutting up that cat? Yeah, those were the, I'll tell you, when I was at Purdue, I had to work for my room, I was going to Kentucky, and Bear Bryant was the football coach over there, and he says, Moose, he says, you come to Kentucky. A lot of people don't remember, he was a coach at University of Kentucky. He says, you come here, he says, I'll give you a brand new car, he says, I'll give you clothes, he says, I'll give you $100 a month. I went to Champaign, sat on Ray Elliott's lap. He said, Moose, I'll give you a heck of a deal. You come to Illinois. I went to Purdue for $20 a month. And I had to peel potatoes for 50 fraternity brothers of mine every day for 2 years. I had washed breakfast, dishes, lunch, and supper. And when I got through playing my athletics and come home, I was shot down. And we used to have, I tried to get Mr. Skabinski in our fraternity. He didn't like that. He didn't go for that stuff. But whenever we had a fraternity party or something, I didn't have the guts to go and ask a girl for a date. And at Purdue, there were a lot of dogs, I'll tell you. I don't know about now, John. But in our time, it hasn't changed, see? But in our time, I was afraid to ask a girl for a date. You know, my dad always says, Junior, he says, when you make the major league, you can get all you want. He says, just forget them. And he was right. But at Purdue, I'd get a date, and I said, listen, I can't go out with you unless you help me peel the potatoes. Because I wanted to get those things done with before I went out. And she'd come and help me. Remember they used to make the Argyle socks for us, Joe? Right? Oh, those, when I think of back of school, I'll tell you, Purdue was great, and I only wish I'd have finished. I've got two boys, which I told Joe. One boy wanted to follow in my footsteps, which I never pushed him. I says, Greg, I says, you do what you want to do. He wanted to be a baseball player. He was a shortstop, and he told me, he says, Daddy, he says, the quarterback from the football team, when the season was over with, he wanted to play short. So the coach put him at short, and my son was knocked down, and I said, don't give me no alibis. I said, you got beat. You know, I said, don't give me no alibis. He took up golf, got a beautiful golf scholarship. He's a 2 handicap, and I'm a 25, right, John? Right? I'm now 15. But he's living in Phoenix, Arizona. He's 25 years old. He graduated from college in marketing. My other son, who is 22, and I got a nice letter from him last week. He's graduating in May. He made the dean's list 3 years in a row. He wants to be a lawyer. And thank God he wrote to 20 different colleges to go for his master's. And the school that he wanted the most to be accepted was Columbia. So he got the letter that he's been accepted. And I wish to hell he was a lawyer right now. Anybody want to ask me any questions? Because this is good. I'll think of something else.
What kind of salary do the Yanks pay you?
What kind of salary do the Yanks pay me? Did they pay me? My first year in pro ball, I made $200 a month in Norfolk, Virginia. Well, the $25,000 that I got, I gave to my mother and father. I gave it to them, and I had to pay the taxes on the money, and they got the rest, which a kid 19 years old, I didn't know. I was underage. I had my parents consent to sign a contract, and I gave it to them. I went to Norfolk, Virginia, made $200 a month, and I roomed with Bill Verdon, who was a manager of Houston, and Don Vincent, and a couple other guys, Lou Skeezus, and the money I got, $200, I sent money to my mother and dad. I made out all right. And then what really teased me off about professional guys making out, God bless them. I mean, I tell my mom every time I see her, I say, Ma, you had me 10 years too early. The most I ever made was $37,000 with the Yankees, and Mickey Mantle was making $100,000, which, to me, he was the greatest thing. I wish he would have made $200,000. But I hit my second year in professional ball. I hit .352. I was minor league player of the year. I had 180 RBIs. I hit 40 home runs, and the Yankees sent me back to the damn minor league. This was my second year in pro ball. Nowadays, guy hits 200, he's making $200,000 and they hole out. You take a guy like Footy, here's a guy that Cubs are trying to get. He's got a 3-year contract with the Philadelphia Phillies, third string catcher making $200,000 a year. And I'll tell you, the most I ever made was 50. People say, Moose, you missed the game. The only thing I miss is my $50,000 that I was making. That's the only thing I miss. I've been out of the game 11 years. I don't miss the game at all. I've went to maybe, in 11 years, I maybe went to about 10 ball games. Right now, I've got 2 good jobs. I got a good pension fund. John, hang on for 4 or 5 years. I got 14 years, and that check comes in every month. And at the age of 45, you can start drawing it. Yes, sir. Who's the number one infielder today? I know damn well Pete Rose ain't not worth no $800,000 a year. I don't care what it is. There's no ball player worth that kind of money. I mean, Pete's a great ball player, a great competitor. He's got another 2 years. God bless him. If he can finesse $800,000, which I was talking to Father, he never heard of me, which that's all right. But we were talking. We were laughing. No, we were talking. We were talking about, I said, Father, I says, you know, I said, he said, Moose, they're giving a lot of salaries. I said, Father, they don't care if you come to the ballpark or not. They got TV rights and radio rights. That's where they're making all the money. in our time, the Yankee, the owners would not let us know what was going on. I hit 303 years in a row with the Yankees, never got a raise. They said, Moose, you don't want to play, stay home. And all of a sudden, the bills start coming. I got to play ball. But nowadays, you hold out, and if the best thing they can do is start leveling off those salaries and say, well, Peyton, I know great football. He better sign that contract for a millionaire overnight, right? He better sign it, or else you get racked up, you don't play ball forever. How can a guy like Cedeno from Houston got a lifetime contract, got a broken leg now, they don't know if he's going to play ball. Isn't that true? He had a lifetime contract. They don't know if he's going to play ball. Yes, sir. My uniform number was number 14, like Ernie Banks and Ken Boyer, Pete Rose. I always had that number when I was in the major leagues. The first number I had was 57, and a couple of guys, Gene Woodland got traded, and I call up New York. I said, I need a new number. I want a lower one. Because I had number 53. But when Gene Woodland got traded, every time I see Gene Woodland, he says, Moose, he says, you call up the day I got traded. I says, yeah, I wanted a lower number because I know you weren't here. So I took number 14 and I always had number 14. Until I played for Gil Hodges with the Washington Senators. And Gil, to me, was a great man. He passed away a few years ago on a golf course. But he says, Moose, he says, you want my number? I said, no, sir, that's your number. Because he always had it when he was with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And that was the only time that I wore a uniform number. George Selkirk, who took Babe Ruth's place, gave me number 3. What the hell I care about number 3? I didn't want no number. Too much pressure on you to get number 3. But the biggest deal I had was coming to the White Sox in 1964. I got traded to the White Sox. And the way, you know, I could have got baseball black. I hope there's no sports writers here. Is there? Is there one? Lots of, I'm not talking then. I don't give a damn. Well, in 63, I'm with the Dodgers. This is the way professional things are, right? I'm with the Dodgers in 63, and I'm having a bad year, okay? I'm hitting about 200. And I go out with Johnny Padres and Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale and Ron Paranowski. We went out and had a couple beers after a ball game, and I hear Johnny Padres, who I know is very close to Buzzy Bavezzi. He was the general manager of the Dodgers. And I'm hearing the conversation. All of a sudden, I heard my name, that I was committed to the Washington Senators in June. That I was committed by word of mouth that I'm going back to the American League. And I hear this, and I go home, and I'm starting to wheel and deal. I says, geez, already? How's it, April, May, June? I know I was hurt, but I couldn't do the job that they wanted me to do. So the season ends. I hit 209. World Series starts. We're playing against the Yankees. Whitey Ford is pitching. Mr. Olsen says, Moose, you're playing first base. Yes, sir. Down 2-for-5. Next day, Al Downing's pitching. I hit a home run off of him. So after the first two games in New York, we go back to California. And I'm going back on a plane. Get off the plane and a beautiful Cadillac waiting for me to use around. You know, I'm a little hero, right? I said, where the hell were you when I needed you? When I was hitting 200, I needed somebody to pat me on the back and say, Moose, how are you? You know, how you doing? I says, now when I'm flying high, I don't need no Cadillac. I'll still drive my little Chevy. It gets me to work. So the next 2 days we win. And I get a phone call from the Dodgers. They said, Moose, we had committed you in June. And you're going to have to go with Washington. But now we're trying to back off. We want you to tell the owners that you're not going to go to the Washington Senators. And I says, you want me to do that? I said, I'm making 50 grand a year. I says, this is my bread and butter. I says, wherever you trade me, I go, right? He says, no, we want to keep you here. Because I hit 385 against my teammates. And we won 4 in a row. So to save face, they want to keep me. So I get a phone call from Mr. Hodges and George Selkirk. He said, Moose, he says, you know, we got your contract. I said, I don't want to report to spring training or Washington. I said, I've got 10 years on a pension fund. I'm retired. Call the next day from Buzzy Bavay. He said, Moose, you're doing a hell of a good job. He says, we might get you back. He says, you keep saying that. So for 2 days, I'm sane. You know, I'm not in the report. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call. He said, Moose, you got to go to Washington. So I call up my new general manager, George Selkirk, and Gil Hodges. And I says, listen, I said, seeing that you're my new owners, I said, I'll tell you, I was told all to say this stuff. I said, listen, I got to make a living. I'm making 50 grand a year, and I'm not going to throw it away. I'd rather go back to the American League because I know the pitching. In the National League, I didn't know the pitchers. I mean, they were tough. It's a low ball pitching league. Don't tell me that the umpires or people say there's not a difference in umpiring in the National League or the American League. Because I never had a sore thumb until I got in the National League. Because you better swing at that inside pitch because it's an automatic strike. And in the American League, if you took the pitch, it was a ball. And it's a low ball pitching league. I was never a golfer when I was young. And in the National League, you better uppercut. And me being a Polish boy, I like that high, hard one that they threw outside. But that's what happens in professional sports. I mean, they were good to me. I enjoyed every minute of it. And one of the biggest thrills I've ever had in my life was when we did win 4 in a row from the Yankees, Joey Bishop, who was a comedian, was a very good friend of mine. We used to play golf a lot in New Jersey with Buddy Hackett and Dick Shawn, Ed Sullivan. They all belonged to the Inglewood Country Club in New Jersey. And Joey calls me up after we beat the Yankees 4 in a row. He says, Moose, he says, you want to work in Vegas? And I said, Joey, I've never been in Vegas. I don't know anything about Vegas. He said, well, listen, he said, I'll give you $1,500 a week. And I said, what? He says, I'll call you back in a half hour. So I'm waiting for the phone call, right? So he's got Frank Howard, Willie Davis, Tommy Davis, Don Drysdale, Ron Peronowski, and myself. We're going to have 6 Dodgers on a stage with him at the Sands Hotel. So I'm waiting for the phone call. He calls me up. He says, Moose, he says, I got you $2,000. Will you go? I said, yes, sir, I'll be there. That's all I did on the show. Was I blew into a paper bag, and when Joey Bishop says, pop it, I hit it. And I got $2,000 a week. I got room and board, and then Jan Murray calls me up, and he says, Moose, we're doing the same show in Reno, Nevada. He says, would you go for $1,800 a week? I says, yes, sir. I said, I'll be there. That was the easiest $8,000 I'd picked up in my life in 1 month. But I met a lot of nice people, Dean Martin and Sinatra, and had the pleasure to meet Angie Dickinson, policewoman. Great woman. Great. Father, I don't know that much about her, but I know he's checking me out, see? Any other questions? Listen, you tell me when it's time, because I got a lot of time. I live in Schaumburg. It'll take me 2 hours to get home. Yes, sir. Oh, Mike, that fight we had? No, I went to, I had to go make an appearance at Hank's place, right? Hank, this guy knows baseball, I'll tell you. Because he had mentioned to me, Moose, remember you had that fight in Chicago when you were at the Yankees? And he said, the pitcher was Art Dittmar. I says, yes. He knocked down Larry Doby. And I said, yes, I remember, because that was the only fight that I ever got into, because Casey Stengel would always say, Moose, when there's a fight, go sit on the bench because you're brittle. You might get hurt. But that day, Art Dittmar knocked down Larry Doby, threw one high and tight to him, and Doby, I had heard Doby says, if I had a knife, I'd stick it in you. And Dittmar says, well, you don't need no knife. So all of a sudden, Doby started running to the mound, and I happened to... I was a gutless football player, and I made a beautiful tackle. When Doby was running to the mound, I must have flew from here to that wall, and I got him down, and Billy Martin started beating the heck out of him. And Walt Dropo thought that I was hitting Doby. Dropo pulls off my pants, and I called time. I said, I got to put on my pants back. Just then, Enos Slaughter thought that Dropo was hitting me, and then Enos Slaughter and Dropo got into a big fight, and Enos Slaughter got the heck beat out of him. But that was the only fight that ever was in. I was at a couple old-timers games last year. We were in Philadelphia, the 1954 Philadelphia Athletics against the 1954 American League All-Stars. And Enos Slaughter was there, and Ray Boone, who was an old-timer. His son's playing with the Phillies now. And first time of bat, I hit the ball off the wall. I couldn't believe it. You know, my eyes are going bad. I got glasses now because Yogi Berra said, Moose, when you get around 42, 43 years old, that newspaper starts going further and further. And I'll tell you, he's right. So, at old-timers games, you're a little bit leery because you don't work out. You know, I like to hit. As far as defense, I was no gazelle around first base. I took dancing lessons from Fred Astaire, which I did in St. Petersburg when Casey Stengel says, Moosey says, you can't play third, you can't play short. I got too many outfielders, which you almost got hit in the head one day. He says, I'll buy you a brand new glove. He says, learn how to play first base. Which he did. He brought me a brand new glove, and two doors away from the Sereno Hotel in St. Pete, there was a Fred Astaire dance studio. He said, Moose, I'd want you to go and take dancing lessons two or three times a week. And I did. I had to learn how to shift my legs around first base because I wanted to be an all-around ball player. I didn't want to just be a hitter. I wanted to work on my weakness. And I used to pay Bobby Richardson $500 a year because pop-ups were bad. That damn thing would keep bouncing up there. And I couldn't catch a pop-up. I don't know what it was. But I'd say, Bobby, lot of room, lot of room. Listen to me. And I remember one year, I was trying to get that golden glove, which you know what you can do with those golden gloves? I think I made about two errors, and Mickey Mantle was playing center field, and a guy gets a base hit, and he rounds first base, you know? So Mickey comes in to field the ball from center field, and he throws the ball behind the runner, and the ball hit the runner in the back, and it moves along, and the guy advances from first to second, and who gets the errors? Moose. 14, right? And I got three of them damn things one day. And now I go in a clubhouse, and, you know, I says, you know, I'm trying to get that golden glove. And I says, sir, I says, the sports writer, I says, why the heck did I get that error? I didn't even touch the ball. The ball hit the runner. He says, well, Moose, we're trying to protect Mickey's fielding average. I says, what about mine? I ain't worried about Mantle. It happened to me. This guy's making $100,000 a year. And I'm over there 16, 18,000, but they want to protect his fielding average. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Some of the toughest, there was a guy by the name of Ryan Duren. This guy had four sets of glasses. Day ball, night ball, twilight. When it was hazy, he couldn't see. And the first pitch, he'd throw up against that screen. And I don't care who it is. When you're up there looking the guy warm up and the first pitch goes up there, I believe in it. There's fear that sets in. And we were playing a game in Miami. No, he was with the Angels at that time, and I hit a home run off of him in the old ballpark, Wrigley Field, in Los Angeles. That was before the Angels moved to Anaheim. And the next time up, he drilled me in the ribs. And I'll tell you, that thing just bore in there. I mean, he threw a heavy ball, and we're all on the bench, and Mickey and Yogi say, Casey, why don't we buy that guy, you know? I'll be darned, during the winter, we got him. We picked him up, and we're in Miami playing an exhibition game against the Brooklyn Dodgers. That's when Snyder was there, and Pee Wee Reese, Hodges, Campanella. All of a sudden, Ryan Duren is pitching, and the first pitch, Reese is taking ready to hit. And the first pitch, he threw over his head, and Reese, he wanted to get out of the game. He wanted no part of it. So Ryan, he tried contacts that day, the first time, and it fell out of his eye. And we called timeout, and everybody's at the mound looking for a contact, right? I'll be damned, he found it. He called timeout, went in the dugout, and washed it, and put it back in his eye. But he was, to me, he was probably the hardest thrower that I've ever seen pitch. But, you know, we talk about Koufax, Drysdale, Bob Gibson, he could throw hard. But the guy a lot of people don't remember is there was a ball player by the name of Herb Score, to me, who I thought could have been one of the greatest left-handed pitchers that ever pitched. I mean, he could throw the curveball, he could throw hard, and Gil McDougal was a guy, my team had hit a line drive in Cleveland and hit him right in the eye and never come back again. But a lot of people don't remember that, but to me, he could have been one of the greatest. Sandy Koufax's first 5 years was nothing, but his next 5 years, he turned out to be one of the greatest. And I remember the pitchers give the, you know, get a little seniority. They give you the pitch inside, outside. There was an umpire in the National League that I really respected, a great ball and strike umpire. And we're playing in a World Series against the Brooklyn Dodgers. I'll tell you the umpire's name, I don't care. Al Barlick. Great man. One of the best that I've ever... I'd love to have him every day I was hitting because he was fair behind home plate. The first pitch he threw, Don Newcomb threw me. I thought the ball was high. I says, Al, where is that pitch? I said, that's a ball. That ain't no strike. He says, Moose, he says, don't you show me up now. We got 71,000 people here at Yankee Stadium. Don't show me up. I says, yes, sir. I said, that's a bad pitch. But I used some other words, Father, which I did. And I got the 2-2, the count, and Don Newcomb made a good pitch on me on the outside part of the plate. And Al Bartlett says, ball. Campanella just went through a tantrum, you know. He calls timeout. He runs to the mound to relieve Don Newcomb of his misery because he should have had me struck out. So all of a sudden, Al Bartlett takes the whisk broom and he's cleaning home plate. He says, Moose, now we're even. And the next pitch, I popped up. But they played a game, you know. I respect an umpire. If he misses a pitch, he'll say, Moose, I missed it, right? I respect guys like, but you get some hard-nosed umpire. You can't use too much profane language. They warn you. If you use it consecutively twice, boom, you're gone. And I never was thrown out of a ball game in my whole career in basketball, football, and baseball. I mean, they do make mistakes, and sometimes they help you out. But I know there was one umpire by the name of Al Salerno. My father beat the heck out of his uncle here in Chicago. Because my dad played semi-pro ball for 18 years. And this umpire, my dad slapped him around a little bit. He was barred for a year. So when Al Salerno come up to the major leagues, he says, Moose, he says, I'm after you. Every time he umpired behind home plate, I never took a pitch. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction. I swung at anything they threw because I know he was out to get me, and he never got me. Thank God he got barred for a few years. And last question, and I quit. Yes, sir. I could talk for an hour. I don't care. Yes, sir. Russ Meyer struck me out 3 times in a row? No, the first time, I'll tell you, Monk, I know, we played golf together last year for Nellie Fox, which I met a lot of nice people here from LaSalle and Peru. And we stayed out late, and we had pizza, and I took him to a pizza place, and we had a good time. But Monk, I'll tell you, when I was, after my first year in Triple A in Kansas City, I went back to Minnesota where Warren had said, because I had lived there for a few years. And they had, Russ Meyer had the Russ Meyer All-Stars. And they played against us guys from the semi-pro league. We picked up some ball players, and we played against Russ Monk in Rochester, Minnesota. And I never faced Monk until that day. And I hit 2 home runs off of him. And he ran around the bases after me and throwing a glove at me and everything else. But that's, I know Mickey Mantle loved to hit against him. But I never faced Monk too much. Because he was with the Phillies at that time, and I guess I was just coming up, and that was at the end of his career. But I'll tell you, he had good stuff. He could throw, and he had a good curveball. And yes? 25? What? I never broke 90. Father, no. I play for 10 cents. We play nickel a point, 5 points, quarter a hole. That's all I play for. Now, the football games, let's talk. Any other? Yes, sir. Gene Oliver? No, he can. I don't know. Gene's living in the Quad Cities, isn't he? And I know he worked for the Secretary of State, and I saw him, but I'm not a good golfer. You know, I met a kid a couple days ago from Elgin, and the kid was supposed to be a great prospect, a pitcher. He's about 6'4". And he signed with the New York Mets, and he was in spring training for a month or a month and a half, and he quit. He didn't like his manager. And the kid is 20 years old, so I meet him a couple of days ago, and I just tore him apart. I said, one thing, I says, Jimmy, I said, I don't know you that well. I said, but you've got a chance to prove one thing. Could I have made the major leagues? Or I didn't have a chance to make it? Or try it. But you don't give a month and a half. And I says, listen, there were managers that I didn't like to play for, but I said, this was my bread and butter, and I had to produce. There was a certain, Eddie Stanky was the worst manager I ever played for. But making 50 grand, I'm going to say yes, sir, no, sir. Right? But I'm saying, I says, why don't you go back and call up the New York Mets, say, listen, I seen the light. I says, you're a heck of a prospect, because I was told he's one of the best around the Elgin area. I says, give him a call. Tell him that you've seen the light. You'd like to have another try. So I don't know if the kid had called, but what I did is I called up Cubs Park, and I talked to the farm director, Carol Davis. I says, Carol, there's a kid by the name of this and that. I said, he's from Al. He said, yeah, Moose, he was a good prospect. I said, well, I talked to the boy a couple of days ago, and I says, you know, the kid wants to go back and try it. He says, well, you have him give me a call. In the meantime, Carol Davis says, he says, you know, Moose, he says, I've been thinking of it. We were talking about you yesterday. He says, you know, we're looking, we'd like for you to be the manager of the Davenport team. I says, no way. I ain't interested in that, going back into baseball. I said, you tell a kid to catch a ball two hands, he'll have a lawyer waiting for you outside. And that's the way it is nowadays. I know Joe Amafitano real well. And Joe says when they were in spring training, Dave Kingman, he was told to hit down the batting cage down a right field line. And Kingman says, no way, Joe, I'm going to take batting practice down a left field line. Now, Kingman can buy Joe's contract and send him to California. But that's the way it is nowadays. And I just hope Jimmy Pearsall won't get hard on these ballplayers in Sarasota. I mean, Jimmy was a good ball player. He second guesses a lot like Harry Carey does. You know, let those kids go out there and play instead of saying they made an error. You think as a ball player I'd want to make an error? I wanted to strike out? And I won't go on his radio show or TV show. I'll go on with Lauren Brown. But I won't go on with Harry Carey because he blasts these guys. These guys ain't out there to make errors. They go out there to do the best. They give 100%. Another story. Last one. I went to the ballpark when Richie Zisk was with the club. I think Mr. Vick made a mistake in not keeping one or the other, him or Gamble. They should have kept one of them two guys. But I don't blame them guys going to Texas. If they didn't get a 10-year contract, boy, I'd pack up my suitcase real fast because Mr. Vick is not going to pay you anything. But I went to the ballpark to get Richie's autograph. And Richie had called and he had a headache. He didn't come to the ballpark. I never heard of this. Had a headache, and he didn't come to the park. I remember one day Yogi was sick, and he called in from New Jersey, and Casey says, where's Yogi? And the trainer says, he's at home. He's got a runny nose. Get Yogi on the phone. Casey, get on the phone. Yogi, get your fanny here to the park. We're playing the White Sox that day. Billy Pierce was pitching because Yogi didn't like to face those left-handers, right? So as it turns out, Yogi pinch hits in the bottom of the ninth inning, we beat the Sox 2-1. That's the way it was in our time. And I remember when I was a kid with Gene Woodling and Hank Bauer, they'd say, Moose, don't you monkey around with my money. When you hit a fly ball, you better be on second base in case that guy drops that ball. Nowadays, you tell a kid to hustle, forget it. They'll buy you and sell you to Tulsa, Oklahoma or someplace. This is the way it is. And if they don't start making an example, yes, who? I don't even know. Oh, S-E-G-H-I? Yeah, I don't know him. He was after me, before me. No, I don't know. I know he was in Kansas City, right? Then he went to, then he's with Cleveland now, right? I don't know. No, sir, I'm 48 years old. I mean, he might be 70. I don't know. But they don't have no team in Cleveland either. The team to watch is New York. They got all the horses. With the old Yankees, they win. They win. Listen, they got rid of Billy Martin. Bob Lemon, come. I think Billy Martin's a great manager, but the ball player says, I don't want to play for Billy. And the owner says, okay, who do you want? Right? Isn't that the way it is nowadays? But every place Billy went, he won. He went to Texas, he come in second place. He went to Minnesota, he won. Went to Minneapolis, Detroit, he won. Goes to New York, and this guy didn't want to catch the ball. So Billy challenged the guy. Now, this little colored guy goes, I don't want to play for Billy. This guy making $400,000 a year. He better catch the ball. Oh, these kids. Go ahead. No, I don't mean you. I mean the ball players. Bucky Dent. Now, here's another Bucky Dent. Thank God he got traded to the Yankees. He's been in two World Series. With the Sox, he'd have still been on the bottom. Now he wants to give Mr. Beck a ride in his car. Corvette, right? He won the most value. I think that's a joke. And when I see Bucky Dent, I'll tell him, you don't show up these guys. Maybe someday Mr. Beck will buy the Yankees. And you might have to be play for this guy. That's what I get hot about. Oh, one-on-one. Yes, sir. Best shortstop nowadays? Who's playing? I don't even know these guys. Oh, when I was playing? Oh, there was Louis Aparicio. Oh, and another thing, the Hall of Fame, that's what gets me hot. And I'm done at, I played 11, I've been out of game 11 years, I haven't even got a damn vote. And Helen Neer, who hit 220 with the St. Louis Cardinals, gets one vote. Who the heck were the other guys? Yeah, you got to know the right people. I won't. I'd rather be in a Polish-American Hall of Fame.
Where's that?
They got one. I'm going to get in the damn thing, too. But they got Helen Neer, and then they got Cleet Boyer, was a glove man, 220 hitter. My teammate got five votes. What the hell did he do? I think it's a joke. I was telling Mike today, a ball player by the name of Enos Slaughter played 20 years in the major leagues, lifetime average 300, and not in the damn Hall of Fame. And that's a joke. That's a damn joke. But Ernie Banks, he hit 272, and he's in there. Anything else before I quit? He knew the sports writer's name, like Leo DeRocher said, right? He didn't know the signs. Yes, sir. Casey, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be up here making a talk. That man was great to me. He talked real good plain English. I know on radio, on TV, and sports radio, he gave the double talk, but I know when I made a mistake on that field, he used a lot of words that I wouldn't say right here. But I'll tell you, he motivated us, and he chewed me out a lot of times because he saw something in me that was in me that he wanted to get out. And that's the way he was. He believed in giving a young kid a chance to make the major leagues. Mickey Mantle was 19 years old when he made the major leagues. Gil McDougall was 21. Tom Morgan was 20. And he's the one that started to have these rookie schools prior to the opening of spring training. And there were days I got taken out. I was cleanup hitter with the Yankees, right? Hitting fourth against the Detroit Tigers. This is the way he was. There were bases loaded and no outs. And Moose, you know, strong right-hand hitter. I got Billy Heff with Detroit. They take him out. They bring in another pitcher. I hear a whistle. I says, you've got to be kidding. He's taking me out in the first inning in Yankee Stadium. Bottom of the first. I threw the bat. I said a few words. I went in the clubhouse, put on my civvies, didn't even take a shower. I went to the Concourse Plaza Hotel, which was a block away. We won. Eddie Robinson, pinch hit for me, hit a double. We won 3-0. The next day I come to Yankee Stadium, Mr. Stengel, as soon as I walked in the door, he says, Moose, I want to see you in my office. And I went in his office. He closed the door. He said, don't you ever do that again. He says, I'm out to win a ball game. And he says, I don't care if I hurt your feelings or not. He says, I want to win the pennant. From that day on, I never bothered that man. Tony Kubek got taken out for a pinch hitter. He threw, you know, Casey with his gimp leg. Tony hit him with the bat and everything. And when, I could tell you a book. So you talk about writing books. Jim Bouton, he wrote a book, Ball 4. Everything in that book was true. I'm not afraid to admit. I was on top of the roof, too, but I didn't see anything. I know a lot of these guys have read this book, but he made $50,000 for writing the book. Whatever he said about Mickey or Elson Howard and Roger Maris, one of these days we'll find him in the trunk. But the guy wrote a book. The first book I didn't hit, I wasn't in it because I had a lawyer waiting on a wing. The second book I hit, he said Moose was a lousy fielder, but he said in two other words, but a great hitter. And I met Jim one day. I said, Jim, you didn't have to say that. I always knew that, you know. But the guy, he wrote a hell of a book, but all of it was true. I'm not afraid to admit it. All right, listen, God bless you all, and thank you for inviting me out here and seeing my buddies. I'm happy to see Joe again. And Johnny, I want to wish you the best of luck and get 4 years or 5 years on a pension fund. You got to break it. That's the name of the game. Nowadays, kids in a major league, you put 4 years. That's all you need. And where can you play 4 years and quit at the age of 24 or 25? And when you're 45 years old, you get $400 a month the rest of your life. And these kids are worried about the two-legged deers, excuse me, father, and the cars. There's such a big future for young kids, soccer, football, basketball, baseball, everything. There's such a future. But a kid would put him sign and low determination, always do 100. I'm teaching my daughter how to play volleyball because Enid Slaughter said his daughter got a scholarship, University of South Carolina. She's 11 years old. I'm teaching her already. Are you kidding? Listen, God bless you all and stay healthy, and thank you again.